This is the Quip and Quill Podcast. I'm your host, Devin Rue, professional fantasy cartographer and illustrator.
And I'm Simon, also known as Wandering DM, and I'm your co-host and a professional narrative designer. Started about 15 years ago, my parents and I, at the time, we went to see a showing of The Mask of Zorro. And when we got out of the theater, my dad thought he would take a shortcut in an alley to get to the parking lot.
You think you're funny. I'm leaving that in there so the whole world will know you really are Batman.
Then the world needs to know I'm Batman. No, the true story goes back more than 15 years ago. If you want to know like how I got into RPGs in general or how I got into being a creative in the RPG sphere.
Let's start with how you became a creative in the RPG sphere.
So that started in 2017. I mean, before that, you know, I did the homebrewing, creating your own world, your campaign setting, or even your own rule sets for whatever game you want to run. But as a full-on, pretty much full-time creative, it started in 2017. I went to Gen Con, my first Gen Con, Gen Con 50, and I met a game developer that I had seen before at a local convention here in Montreal. And being the only two, not necessarily in the whole convention, but at the time in the room, we were, my friends and I and him were the only, you know, French speaking people. So we got a table together to run the game that he was demoing, Sentinels of the Multiverse. And we got to talking, blah, blah, blah. Told him, you know, how I would like to get more into, you know, veering off of my old career path into this, which, oddly enough, he had the same thing. He used to work in pharmacy just like I did before switching over to game design. And so we got to talking a bit, and that was that. And then about 2 years later, there's basically radio silence during those 2 years. You know, I stream, I produce, you know, content on the DMs Guild and whatnot. And then he reaches out to me because a friend of his is starting a business, a game studio here in Montreal. And he's looking for narrative designers, and he's like, you should reach out to him. I know you do well. I'll recommend you. Him at the time, Philippe, you know, already has a job, so he wasn't going to switch over, but he was like, you know, give him a call. And that was, what are we, 2023? Yeah, it's going to be 4 years soon.
Nice.
As an actual full-time, you know, day job, 40 hours a week creator that only does that for a living.
Right. What exactly is a narrative designer?
Depending on the size of your studio, there's a good number of definitions. So that's a funny part. If you look, let's say, on YouTube and you search what is a narrative designer, you will find thousands of videos, each of them with a different answer.
Okay.
Essentially, it's a fancy term for writer.
Oh,
but
okay.
It's different than just writing. So you can be on your own writing, you know, a novel, writing novellas, poems, whatever you want. That's one thing. The job of the narrative designer is to essentially take this story that you want to tell, but turn it into an interactive experience.
Right.
So it's not just writing, say, a book. I'll take, for example, one of the biggest games, major games that I've worked on in the last few years, Vampire the Masquerade Chapters. It's not just writing a game of Vampire the Masquerade. It's also writing, in this case, every branches of the narrative, where you would buy a book, a TTRPG book, let's say a campaign setting or an adventure module for D&D. The adventure is laid out. The designers have thought of most of the most common outcome of certain situations. But when your players get in a room, let's say in a dungeon, and they decide to, I don't know, flood the room with Jell-O for some reason, because they have it in their head that this will be the best idea ever, and it probably is, but you as a designer hasn't thought of that.
Right.
The job of the narrative designer is to take those common nut jello outcomes, let's say, and take them into account. Like, this is the path I'm trying, this is the story I'm trying to build, this is the experience I want the players to have. Here's all of the building blocks that you need so that you have the best experience possible and that you have the least amount of work to fill in the blanks should, you know, fill up the room with jello.
Right.
In my case, in Vampire, it included, because it's a GM-less game, so I had to write not only all of the positive outcomes, but all of the negative ones. Mm. And each of them has to be just as fun. You have to think about, you know, what if the players go left instead of right? What if they try to talk to this monster or this enemy instead of just attacking them outright? What will happen then? And to sort of constrain all of this within the media that you're given, often enough, in my case, page counts.
How on earth can you have this as a day job and still want to play and or run RPGs?
Yeah, so after working kind of late during the day, I get home. Yesterday, I started building a murder mystery game for fun after work.
Of course you did.
it's my way of relaxing. I not only do I do this as full time, but I also have done freelance in the past. You'll see my name, and I've worked on the Witcher RPG, for instance. I've worked on other games as well, even for like 5e products and such that weren't self published.
Right.
I don't know. I need to write, I guess.
Right.
I'm really fond of the quote from Hamilton, write like you're running out of time. That pretty much defines who I am and what I do.
Right. I mean, so we've had this conversation, but because there's people that haven't heard us talk together. So we sort of obsess over world building.
Yes.
Right down to, you know, because I get asked a ton of times, you know, like, you know, do you ever take the tectonic plate movement into consideration? Yes, actually, 100%. If it's my world and I built it literally from the ground up, I start as it was space dust. I go through the entire history. I want endless pantheons. I want every aspect of it. Not necessarily for my players. I mean, it's great when they ask and I have it for them, but it's 100% for me. Like, I love world building. And how deep into world building do you get? Like, are you tectonic plates? Too much.
So there's, I would say, from the things that I do, and that I'm mostly talking from, you know, from experience and for myself. I'm not talking on behalf of every other narrative right. designer out there. You will probably see about 30 to 40% of all the work I put in let's say, again, chapters.
Right.
There's an NPC you can meet. I guess befriend might be a term, but not really. You can tolerate them, I guess.
Right.
Or they can get on your nerves. The point is, they should get on your nerves. But this NPC has, if you look very closely on the artwork, they wear a tiny, a necklace with a tiny, like Jesus on a cross on it, a crucifix.
Right.
And they're a vampire, so obviously there has to be a story to that.
Right.
And the entire story, I know it. Like, down to the dates of when things happen and when this NPC met a religious figure who helped them in the past, how they helped them, what happened between them, why they stopped talking to each other. And the thing is that other NPC, you will meet them in the game. There is enough info, like I said, 30-40%. There's enough info for a player to connect the dots. But like, they won't know that this thing happened on like October 26, 1971.
Will you ever release that, though?
Nope.
No, why not?
In Q&As, perhaps. In other media, perhaps, you know, if... I'm not going to talk too much about the game because while it's been released and all that, it's fairly new, so I don't want to spoil anything.
Right.
I can tell you in private. But there is a... there's material out there that I should come out with if everything, you know, works out according to plan. But there's a lot of it that's just because of I needed that. I needed to know that in order to be able to properly portray this character. Make a long story short, they're trying to prevent you from doing something bad to a church. But bad is subjective. He thinks it's bad mostly because of personal connections. In the grand scheme of things, it's good.
Right.
There needs to be just that like nuance of they want you to stop, but they have to be conflicted.
Right.
And the conflict needs to be believable. If they're just conflicted for the sake of being conflicted, of just being angsty about it, no one's going to buy it.
I'm assuming that, of course, it's this level, if not more. I mean, I personally know that your homebrewed worlds are from your own calendars and time, and like you go into the weeds. You're practically underwater. You're so in the weeds at this point. So, if ultimately, would you want to release entire worlds that you've created? And yes. Watch other people play in them? Or do you want to be the only person kind of like running games in them?
No. That is one thing where I think that differentiates me from, say, a writer, a novelist, is I want people to play in the sandboxes that I create. I don't want them to just watch it or, in the case of a novelist, you know, read it.
Right.
I want them to play in it. I want them to take what I've made and I want them to twist it and mold it into their version of it. I have my version and it's never going to be the, you know, canon official version. It's my version of it. But when I put something down on paper or in a PDF and publish it, I'm looking into how people are going to receive it, what they're going to think of it, and what they're going to do with it. And when I worked on The Witcher, I worked on the Druid class, the Druid and the Priest. Mm-hmm. I have a vision of what a Druid should be in an RPG,
right.
Which, oddly enough, is not the Druid from D&D. But I know that a lot of people... Yeah, I know that a lot of people, and because of, you know, pop culture, that's pretty much in the TTRPG sphere, that's, you know, the Druid being a shape-shifting animal, a bear, and doing awesome stuff, sleeping with a vampire.
Uh-huh.
This is an image that a lot of people have of the Druid, and I don't want to enforce my vision upon everyone else. Just because I like one thing, there should be something good for everyone. I think I just got an analogy that might work.
Okay.
Whereas a writer prepares a meal, the narrative designer makes a buffet. I'm presenting you with a lot of things. Each one should be just as good as the other, give or take, because of, you know, time constraints, budgets, and all that stuff.
Right.
But you should be able to pick and choose from all of that and create your own meal with it. Have your own experience.
Right.
Whereas no matter how often I will read It by Stephen King, I might, because, you know, you acquire life experiences as you grow older. You're not going to see the same thing when you read it as a child or when you read it as an adult. Partly, you know, the trauma.
Yes.
But it still is going to be it. It's still going to be about, you know, spoiling a, I don't know, 40, 50 year old book, but it's about a shape-shifting alien from outer space.
Right.
It's not going to change. It is?
No, just kidding.
Well, in reality, it's Tim Curry's origin story. It's just no one really knows about that.
Right. I mean,
the few people that knew in Hollywood were dead. And if I die before this podcast is released, you all know why.
Does that mean you just condemned all of us to die? Is this like when you watch the videotape that we're all going to die in 7 days? God damn it, Simon. I'm producing this podcast. If I got to go down, so does everyone else. Fuck it.
The thing is, if you share it to 7 of your friends, you know, the curse is lifted and blah, blah, blah.
Sweet. Yada. I don't even have 7 friends.
If we all, oh shit.
No, just kidding.
I forgot this is a podcast for nerds.
Right.
I was going to say, you know, if everyone hears it, Tim Curry can't go after every one of us.
Can he? We just got to outrun our slowest nerdy friend.
Yeah, basically. No, what was I saying? Damn it. Yes, it the buffet and the narrative experience, and to bring that all around to, I want people to come to my buffet and eat what I've made, but I want to know what they have on their plates. I want to know what they've taken from it and what they've made with it. I do have my own campaign setting that I use. I've never actually used that. I've worked in. I've ran a couple of games at home, but it's never good enough for me. And by good enough, I mean it's not a imposter syndrome type of thing. It's just there really isn't enough material yet to have anything, like to produce anything that would be worthwhile, that would be substantial.
Right.
It's mostly I have like little ideas here and there, so I can run like a one shot in a specific region of the world. And, you know, with some games, I add new info because I learned or I came up with events in the world or other places, or and then they get refined. Some of them get removed. There's a lot of it's still very much in flux.
Right.
I have versions of, you know, I have my version of the Forgotten Realms that I run games in. I have my version of Star Wars that I've ran games in. Oh. But these are, you know, they're known IPs, so I'm never going to release anything about it.
Right.
There's a lot less work to do on them. But yeah, no, I have, you know, like the Montreal that I'm using for my VTM Chronicle is my version of Montreal. It's not right. The canon version of Vampire. I wrote it anyway, so, you know, I can do whatever I want. But it's, I basically took what I liked about the canon that we built. And then I seeded in other things that I couldn't do with the official one.
Right. But that's what games should be at the table. Mm-hmm. It should be to take from any source material, take from it what works best at your table and play in that sandbox than necessarily I mean, in the same context, if you are someone who doesn't have those ideas or just don't feel like you can, I fully understand like going with a completely pre-written, you know, it's not like one is better than the other, but I think every creator's hope, or at least, you know, at least it is with like mine and yours. Like my hope is always, I want people to take my maps that have like no labels on them. Please give these places your own name. Tell me the stories of what's happening in there. There's so few people that end up doing that. And I always feel like, oh man, I create these huge maps for you to go play in and write stories about. Tell me what happens.
I got the message. All right. I will publish my fanfic about your stuff.
Finally. Oh my God. Do you know how long I've been trying to hint at this? I mean, you know.
Yeah, I have a collection here of anonymous letters that just say, you know, write it or else. I don't know
what you're talking about. I have no idea what you're talking about.
But it is something that I've thought about. And I mean, we've done it before for a game of yours, where I just went way too deep into creating the background of a culture.
Right. Oh, but I love when my players do that.
Same.
Yeah. I love giving them bits and pieces that they can world build, especially like, you know, we've talked about it before where all of my players create their hometown.
Yep.
You know, tell me where you're from. Tell me the people that lived in your town. Tell me your parents, your family, your best friend, the first person you kissed, the first person you had a crush on. I want to know all of these things, not to necessarily crush your character with that information, but because I want those NPCs, if we ever go back to your hometown, I want to know who's there. And it takes a lot of burden off the DM.
Yes. Oh, yes. But yeah. even not just about going back to the hometown, just knowing certain things about a character, you can reintroduce. We as humans outside of the game, are creatures that seek patterns and everything. So if something repeats in your life or seems familiar, you'll always, pay a little more attention to it, or it might mean something more to you because of past experiences. And just knowing, let's say, your character's first kiss, right, and then have something, the same smell.
Yes.
Like your character's first kiss was in a barley field, like a field of barley in, late summer. And next thing you know, you are in an inn. Things have been really, really hard on the party lately, and the players might be a little paranoid by now. And then they get into that inn and it smells of that same barley.
Yeah.
Just to remind the character, hey, remember when you felt the most like the safest in your life?
Right.
This is similar. Like, you are safe here. Now, other GMs would be like, hey, remember last time you felt safe? Yeah, not here.
Right.
It can go both ways.
Let me rip that out from underneath you, but yeah.
Yeah, the thing is if you do that, like, please do it with care.
Yes.
But the point would be, normally the trope, which, in my work, we deal a lot with tropes. The trope would be, this is a moment you felt safe, ergo, you should feel safe here.
Yes. Speaking of which, with all the other things that you have written, so I do know that you've dealt with trolls as well. So one of the things that I kind of been getting into with a lot of these episodes has been the darker side to being in this industry and being a freelancer. One, paying our bills and talking about the length of time that it takes to create things or just to earn a living wage. The things that people say, not realizing there's a human being attached to that.
Yes.
And realistic expectations for other creatives that want to eventually, earn a living
make
in
it.
This. Yeah, do this full time. Although I'm always hesitant because definition of success should be on an individual basis and shouldn't be like a monetized thing specifically, because that doesn't always work out that way.
No, I have reached my definition of success, let's say, because I've reached the goal that I had set out in my life back in high school, which is one day live off of this.
Right.
Doesn't mean that it's all rainbow and mansions.
No, you don't live in a mansion?
Nope.
Oh,
doesn't
shit.
Mean that there aren't, moments when it's nail bitingly stressful.
Yeah.
And you don't know how you're going to end up, what you're going to eat at the end of the month. Like, these things happen. And while there is a lot of criticism to be had about the industry as a whole, and especially in regards to freelance and how we're remunerated versus what we do and all that. And this is not for anyone who has ever hired me. This is not a criticism of any one of you. But in general, it's a thing, and it's a thing, but it's also a certain vicious circle, because there's not a whole lot of money to be had in the industry, period.
Right.
There are a few major players, WotC, that can do things that the other companies might not be able to. Then again, WotC is not as big as certain people think they are. Oh, they bring in a lot of money. Yes, but also, how many people do they have to pay? Like, how many people do they have on their payroll in order to be able to rake in all of that money? What is left? And also, it being a giant company, there's also a question of shareholders and, you know, money going to people that, in my opinion, should not get as much, eat the rich. I don't know a lot of developers who can do just that and live their lives off of it, make a living off of it. A lot of times what you'll hear, you'll see is developers who have a partner who also brings in, I'm not going to say breadwinner necessarily, but they contribute, they help, because doing it on your own is very, very difficult. And it is possible. It doesn't mean it'll happen. You might be the most talented individual, but the opportunities never present themselves.
Yep.
And by talented, I mean skillful. It might just also be circumstances and luck and
economy
and timing. And there's a lot of things that go into it. And I think I will never want to gatekeep. In fact, in my career path, I used to be a trainer. So teaching is something that I love doing.
Yes.
And I want new people to come in. I want new ideas to be generated. I want new takes on, you know, old concepts. I want people to reinvent the wheel all the time.
Yeah,
absolutely. But at the same time, like, don't go in thinking that just because you are publishing, I don't know, one adventure module a month, that you will suddenly be able to live off of it. Some people do, and some people do both. You know, they publish once a month, a 10, 15 page adventure, and they can make a living off of it through things like Patreon. When I was in high school, Patreon did not exist. Like, the only way that I saw way back when, we didn't even have game design classes. That didn't even exist when I was, especially not here. Like, I mean, it might have in places like California. Mm-hmm. But even for video games, it was fairly rare. And like, one of the ways that you could have of doing freelance was writing for Dragon or Dungeon magazine.
Oh, yeah.
And you'd have to submit your stuff by mail and hope that you get picked. And I mean, that's how Chris Perkins got his start, if I remember correctly. Who's, you know, someone who came from the cold wastes of Canada, just like me, and moved on to WotC and is now actually, you know, lead narrative designer, like creative director, I think now.
For anyone uncertain, WotC stands for Wizards of the Coast. It's their initials.
It's just faster to say, yeah. But, you know, now there are other things you can live off of. So to go back to the one adventure a month, you know, you can have patrons on Patreon that will that are interested in what you do and will generate for you enough money that you can live off of it. But it might not be.
Right.
It might be just enough for you to be able to do that and have to have a part-time job.
Right.
To make ends meet. It might be that sometimes, you know, for, I don't know, 4 or 5 months a year, you can completely live off of that. And the rest of the time you can't.
Yep.
And sometimes, you know, you'll get lucky and someone you met at a convention will get you a job and you'll be able to do that 24/7.
Right. We talk about the hustle culture, and mm-hmm. I always want to preface this with any of the conversations that we have, especially between what is considered or view as successful people in this industry. Hustle culture is we completely understand, all of us at one point or another have had to do it. Yes. There was a time where I was literally making huge world maps for like next to nothing, because honestly, nobody knew who I was. I needed things to get my art out there, and I was just taking any projects that were offered in an effort to get my name there. Mm-hmm. But the moment that you have the opportunity to ask for a living wage, immediately do so. Because the more that we do this, the more chances other people will automatically just offer that to other people.
And I know that it hurts to say, I'm going to ask for a living wage out of this potential employer who's asking me for a contract and they refuse. And you go there, you sit there and you go, is it because I asked them for too much?
Right.
But the thing is if everyone asks for too much, at some point they'll have to. Now, I'm not saying, you know, ask $5 a word.
Right.
What the hell is this? But if everyone, especially for writers, because it's often per word, you cannot have 25 cents per word if no one has 25 cents per word. You know, right. it's sort of a building, like we build on top of each other. So if you ask for 25 and you are told no, and then the next person they go to also asks for 25 and they say no, and then the third and the fourth and the fifth candidate that they go through asks for 20, they'll be like, well, you know, we're crunching for time. This person is asking for less. It's kind of in our budget, not necessarily what we wanted, but we'll go for this. Or they'll go for 15. Or they go. But over time, as everyone sort of adjusts what they want to, at least, at the very least, not make something that would be below like the poverty line.
Right. Right. If at all possible, always do your best to ask for something that can that affects everybody in the industry. If you can ask for it, absolutely do your best. I do, you know, at one point I kept telling everyone what my prices were, but would say like, oh, but they're negotiable. If somebody kind of like balked at the price or was like, oh, I don't know if I can afford that, then that was the only time that I'd be like, well, I really want to do this project. Let's work within your budget. You know, but this is also when I started learning like, okay, I'll do that. But how about instead to help recoup the costs, I get to sell the prints of the maps and they're now, it's now stays my art. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, an immediate yes from most of the people I worked with, you know. I feel really bad. Not too long ago, I had somebody that came up to me and literally had signed away their artwork for like next to nothing. And then the person who essentially purchased it from them used it all over the place to promote their company and way beyond what they originally said. And I was like, well, the problem is that as far as a court is concerned, you did work for hire. And because of that, you don't have it in your contract for any kind of limit or licensing or anything else. You don't, unfortunately, legally, you don't have a leg to stand on.
And that is something that a lot of freelancers have to, if there's one advice that I would say is make friends with a lawyer.
Yes.
Preferably a copyright lawyer.
Yep.
Because that will save you in the long run.
And if you can't, there are so many.
There are resources.
Yeah, there's so many writers and artists and creatives in this space, specifically the tabletop space, that are more than happy to like talk about how much they make, what their contracts do and don't include, who we have or haven't worked with. I love it. Kate May said it perfectly. She was like, yeah. Don't think we don't talk to each other.
Yeah.
Because we do. And if you are an asshole to us and you don't pay your artists or your writers, we talk.
Mm-hmm.
We will happily let other artists and writers know that you didn't pay us or that you paid us shitty or that you, you know, went back on your contract or that you lied about something or whatever. So by all means, you know, and I get people that message me all the time, like, have you worked with such and such company? What do you think of them? You will get an honest answer.
Same. I've been, I am thankful and have been lucky that all the people that I've worked with, that I've written for, were all amazing employers.
Yeah. I wish I could say that, but I can't. But I can say the majority of them have been.
Yeah, there's I should not say all.
Right.
Because I immediately thought of one, but there is one example that I have. Mind you, I haven't been doing that as long as you have. So, right. But it's a thing too. I mean, you will sometimes get an employer who doesn't really care, and they'll ask for something and say, you haven't specified in your contracts how many revisions you want. Yes. Or you will do before, you know, needing to be paid extra, and they will press you for it. They will get every minute of your time they can.
Yes, they will. And they are just... The hard part is that when you are trying to pay your bills and you're trying to get your name out there and on, you know, credits and everything else, it is so hard to like put your foot down and say something. If you have the opportunity to talk to somebody who maybe can find a better or more eloquent way for you to get your point across, you know, again, definitely. And it's another reason why I really want to do, once I started recording these podcasts and realized like all of us have a lot of really similar situations occur, which means that there's plenty of companies out there that are more than willing to take advantage of artists or writers that don't know the difference or that are new mm-hmm. to the space. And I'm like, no, I want the cautionary tale. I want it out there. I want to make sure that, you know, other writers and artists have the ability to like fucking say something. I had somebody very early on actually approach me, and I'm so happy I turned this down. I almost said yes to this contract, which I later found out not only did they not pay any of their artists, basically took the product and ran with it, sold it, and never paid anybody. What an asshole, you know. And they wanted a world map, which is 4 to 6 weeks of work, which I have to do.
You need to eat those weeks,
right? And it's full time, so it's not like I can even do other things along with it while I'm making these maps. They take a lot of work. It's a lot of reading and getting through and then, you know, going back mm-hmm. and forth. So at that point, to have somebody turn around and like literally would have taken a map of mine and sold it to other people and made money off of it, and I wouldn't have seen anything. And I'm like, and it is by sheer like my I had another project that was just taking up too much time, and I was like, I can't take this on. I'm sorry. You know, we all see.
Sometimes you say no. Yeah, you say no to things that you would want to work on because you're currently stuck on a contract, and then that contract sort of falls through, or you are being taken advantage of, and then the sting just hurts the more because of that.
Again, it feeds into the whole hustle culture of, you know, oh, well, now I got to say yes to everything. No, you don't.
And sometimes, you know, maybe a project you thought would have been fun to work on ends up not being.
Yep.
I know a lot of the working in the board game industry. There's a lot of companies that work with major IPs, and major IPs. And this information is public, so I can talk about it. I'm not going to name the IP, and it is not a company I have worked for. It's someone else who's a designer for another company who has said it on their Kickstarter. So, you know, if there's any problem, that's on their end. Right. But sometimes the thing with major IPs as well is there's a lot of restrictions that you are going to have that you wouldn't necessarily have otherwise. And these restrictions might mean that you do not get to have the freedom that you thought you would. Yeah. Maybe that contract, that working with that one IP that you really enjoy, maybe it's not as rainbows and unicorns as you thought it would be.
Yep.
And taking that one contract that takes you, let's say, 6 weeks, you had to say no to two other contracts of 3 weeks each that, you know, would have paid the bills, but might not have had the appeal that the first one has. And that's also kind of a gamble and something you learn with experience of like, okay, well, and also lawyers.
Yes.
Especially when you start working with major players, you need to get lawyers involved and to have someone check your contract because, well, that's capitalism for you.
Yes. And I do want to touch a bit on really quickly with copyright. And copyright, specifically with IPs and everything else, it does depend on the type of work that you're doing. So like a perfect example is, you know, everyone makes fan art and blah, 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 and some people sell it. And so I will get asked often if I could make a map of wherever, whatever video game world or whatever. And I'm like, I can't because it's, you know, somebody's IP. And they're like, yeah, you could just make it as fan art. I was like, if I make it as fan art, then I have to do it for free and I can't sell it and I never make the money on it. And they're like, oh, well, I see other people doing it. That's great. And you can make fan art and some you can sell and some you cannot. If whatever you're making can be mistaken for something made by the company specifically for that IP, no, you cannot. If you're drawing a character, you're not using all the names and towns and locations like you are on a map. And these are, all of those names are under an IP. So even if I made a blank map, because it's easily recognized landmass of the Game of Thrones, Westeros, people are going to know.
Yeah, but you call it Westeros with an OU instead of a W.
Right. And nobody knows anymore.
Yeah.
But if you want to work for those companies, don't do it.
Despite all of what we've talked about, and despite all of the grief that, you know, trolls and bad faith actors, and be it employers or customers can bring, or fellow players can bring, like, I would not change that for the world.
Right.
I would not trade this job for anything else.
Absolutely not.
Save the same job with, you know, a better pay. But... I'm not going back to a non-creative outlet. I don't want to leave. And the only reason I would leave the gaming industry is because I have been wrecked by it.
Right. Burnout is real.
Burnout is real. And I think a lot of people that leave the industry is because of burnout.
Yes.
Sometimes more often than not brought on by bad actors. But no. I'm not trading that for anything in the world.
Absolutely not. I love what I do for a living. I love the people I get to meet. I love the people I get to work with, the creatives I've had these amazing conversations with. I love that there is such a camaraderie in the community, and it does feel, for the people that genuinely are inclusive, that they are extremely warm and welcoming. And that includes some companies that I work with that are just extremely, they're like family. You know, I have a couple people that I work with that honestly, it feels like I'm just sitting down with a really good friend and we are world building and we're making something. And it just so happens to like be for a book or be for a stream or whatever. That's just, you know, like a plus, but it's not, you know, and it's great. And being able to build those relationships outside of the fact that I get to be creative and create art and get paid to do that and earn a living is just like even more amazing. And there's no words that describes how this is compared to, especially, you know, my former occupation I loved, you know, I loved working with other companies, whether I was a an efficiency manager or when I was doing my research analyst, I loved doing that because I'm an organizational thinker and I love solving problems. But it absolutely pales in comparison to how this feels. Mm-hmm. And, you know, part of it is, 14-year-old me who first started playing D&D back in the 80s is like, oh my God, you get to do this for a living.
Yeah, younger Simon would also be pretty stunned.
Yeah.
We talked about stressful moments. We talked about a lot of negative things. But I have seen, so I've been through a burnout before, and I have chronic anxiety born out of past trauma. And despite it all, despite everything negative we just talked about, I have seen, and I kid you not, a major difference, a positive difference in how fulfilling that creative job is and what it does to my mental health.
Yep.
No matter the amount of stress that I go through right now, it pales in comparison to the damage that the stress I had before in my other jobs came with. There is something, when you're a creative person, there is something so fulfilling to being able to throw into the world all of the things that are in your brain.
Yeah.
And to share it with everyone that, I don't know, it's strange, I guess.
It's magic.
But yeah.
Yeah. It's magic brought into the real world. There's a moment. I know the exact moment. It was my birthday when Matt handed the cast the first map I ever made him. Watching the entire cast just explode and gush over something I created. There is no better feeling in this world that I have ever fucking experienced. And it's the same every time, not just with Critical Role, but I mean, when I've seen streams where a DM hands their players a map that I've made, or their reactions, you know, seeing something I've created, or when I do it with my own players, just to see someone else that loves what you've done so much that they want to devour it and consume it and play in it. And that feeling as a creative just feeds me for like a year of wanting to do projects.
Yep. There's right now, you know, Chapters is shipping is pretty much done, save for some hiccups. But when it started, I didn't know how much I'd be like tearing up from seeing pictures of Amazon, not Amazon, we weren't shipping with Amazon, but whatever, Amazon boxes, like on someone's porch. Yep. And seeing their comment on Facebook or other social media, just going like, oh my God, I can't believe it's real and it's here.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow, this is magic.
Yeah.
I live for that shit. I live for, you know, whenever I make a character that players want to smooch, that's what I live for.
Yep. Whenever I make a map and I get a message from a DM going, I didn't even notice you put that there, and my players are now obsessed with it. Because I've drawn something on the map that the DM didn't pay attention to, didn't notice it there. You know, why is there an X there? I don't know. You gotta have to go there and find out. Now they're like, now I gotta make up something. Have fun. Play in my world. It's great. Tell me what's there when they get there.
Yeah, to have people find Easter eggs that I've seeded, or even I've had quite a few comments recently of players that really enjoy playing one of the characters that I really enjoyed writing. And I don't know, it warms my heart. Like, it makes my day sometimes to just see there's an ocean of or a potential ocean of, you know, negativity and you know, there's also so much shit going on in the world.
Yes.
But like that tiny spark of someone going like, I love this, or I want more of this, or even just, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Doesn't like, have to be gushing. It could just be like, this is great.
Yeah.
Yes.
And to have other people, there's someone who wrote recently that said, you know, I bought the game because I'm a big fan of the universe and all that. And I figured, you know, it's a board game and my partner, you know, they do board games, but they don't really do RPGs. So I'm going to try to break the ice with it. And then, right. You know, a week later, there's another message. It's like, my partner's hooked.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes.
One of my absolute favorites is finding out that somebody proposed to their partner with one of my maps. It had nothing to even do with the game. I was like, really? You like my map? And like, and it wasn't even like an established world or anything. It was just a map that I had drawn and they loved it. And their partner had commented on it. And so they decided to use that as like, you know, they printed up, got a prop map and everything from me, printed up like a little like quest type of
nice scroll.
And then they found the map and they thought, you know, like it was going to be something else, and they opened it up and there's a ring and there's their partner down on one knee, and I was like, you, that's so fucking beautiful, you know, like
and like that comes back to what we were talking at the start of the episode of like, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
It's just to put out in the world something that we want people to do with what we create, whatever they want with it. Like, you never thought that someone would propose using your map before.
No.
Like, that's not the reason probably that you made the map in the first place.
Nope.
But how amazing is it that people now want to do that?
Right. Here's the biggest thing. Every artist, writer, everything else generally makes art so we can connect with other people. Because, again, back to the whole, you know, I come up, I say things that are very abrupt and sometimes not technically with any emotion, because I don't think that it's an emotional statement or doesn't warrant emotion. Mm-hmm. And some people will take it like I'm being very hostile or angry or whatever. And I'm not, but it's my form of communication. But I can convey something with maps that I can't ever put into words, which is I love to play. I might be almost 50 years old. I don't care. I still play, and I want that playing to be the same for other people. I want a map that makes you want to explore, that makes you want to create a character that leaves their hometown. I want you to get immersed in that world, not so much just because I made it and blah, 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 but because I want you to experience that same sort of magic with playing like I do. And then I actually have a connection with you and we have something in common and you mm-hmm. become part of my tribe.
I have to create because of the deal I made with a genie way back in 97.
Right. And I made it with the devil.
If I don't create, it's going to come collect, and I don't want that. Yeah.
You know what it wants to collect?
Nope.
No, you don't even know you signed a contract without looking at the clauses?
Well, remember when I said, you know, make friends with lawyers?
Right.
Yeah, that was a thing.
Yeah. I mean,
I get the feeling it's just I'm going to be forced to GM for them forever or something like that.
I mean, honestly, though, there could be far worse things. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no. Woe is me. It's going to make me do what I like forever.
Right. Oh, no. Anything but that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's a lot of positivity about it. There is a lot of being able to connect with people that you wouldn't normally, or have conversations you wouldn't normally. There's some amazingly creative people out there that end up starting companies that you'll get to work with. That, and we do talk about them too. You know, it's not just us, you know, sitting there ragging on horrible people. And there's no like absolute list of these are horrible people, never work with them. There's no list anywhere. What it is, however, is that we do like to talk about our experiences. And if a bad experience occurs with somebody that we're working with, and someone asks us about that company, yeah, we're going to say this is our experience. It could just be us. Some people, you know, some people have bad days or projects just go massively awry, or somebody adds in something that someone else on the project was not intending to be there. Like, there's a ton of different factors.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But the thing is if it keeps happening at some point, you know, you get the message.
Right. Once, twice, maybe. After that, no. You know. But yeah, there's far, far more positive experiences. Even with trolls and everything else. You know, I made the joke. There's, believe it or not, there's people out there who hate my work. It's weird, I know.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But there's people out there who hate my work. And, you know, honestly, that's fine. There's a lot of other artists out there who do incredible work. I just don't particularly connect or care for it. I won't bash them for it, though. But, you know.
No.
Right.
No, because you shouldn't.
Right. But, I mean, it's okay. It's okay if somebody doesn't like what you create, as long as they kind of keep it to themselves. But also, you'll have far, far better experiences that will drive you to want to stay in this industry. The hardest part is getting past the hustle culture enough to get to that point. And but
there's also
burnout.
Yeah, I will just add, there is a lot of positive that you will not see in written form.
Correct.
People who have a good time, that are enjoying either an adventure you wrote, a game you created, a map you made, it's a silent majority.
Yes.
Maybe when you see them face to face, they will come and tell you about the adventure they've had. They will want to talk to you about the character they made in your game, or you know, the ending they got in their playthrough or what have you. But in like leaving reviews on a website like DriveThruRPG or you know, comments on Facebook or Twitter, most of the people that have had a positive experience will not leave comments. And that's why it's important, kids, to leave comments when you have positive experiences.
Yes.
But for the most part, they'll just leave like a very good rating. Like they'll say like, oh, 9 out of 10.
Right.
And that's it. And you have to think, no, they haven't written an entire chapter on why they hate your game and why you should, you know, do some really bad things to yourself, because that's just how people are, I guess.
Yeah.
And that little 9 out of 10, like, it means the world to that person, maybe.
Right.
Well, you don't know, but,
you know, here's a good thing. Anyone out there, if you love things that you've, you know, read, played, interact with, saw on the internet, do you leave a positive comment to everything that you've experienced? If the answer to that is no, assume that you're in the majority. And this is the same with art or writing or creating in this space. No news at this point is good news, you know?
Yeah.
The other thing is like the thing that really cemented, you know, it, celebrity is relative, especially in this industry. And assuming that somebody's name is used a lot or seen a lot or is associated with a lot of things doesn't mean that this person has tons of friends and doesn't need any positivity or doesn't need to be told that, you know, your positive experience with it.
But I think also, yeah, like as a general rule, no one of us. And now I am going to talk for all writers and narrative designers in the world. None of us will feel bothered by someone who says, hey, by the way, I really enjoyed what you did.
Right.
Like, unless you're hunting me down in like the public restrooms of like a restaurant.
Right.
If you just, you know, in person or on social media or what have you, and you just go like, I fucking love that part.
Yeah.
Makes my day. And you will not, even with like, quote unquote, celebrities, I don't think you will bother them by just telling them how much fun you had with what they did.
No. I mean, at worst, somebody's incredibly busy and they may not see it, but it doesn't mean that they'll never see it or that when they do, they'll be like, eh, whatever. You know, like everyone likes positivity. Mm-hmm. Everyone wants to know that what they're doing, there's no point in, especially in this industry, there is no point in creating it if you're not doing it for other people's enjoyment and experience, because this is an entertainment industry.
Yeah.
You know, nobody wants to make a game that everybody hates. So we all are trying to make art and writing that you all love. Mm-hmm. Leave positive, you know, try to actually, the best way to do it is to actually do it through proper channels. You know, I get a lot of messages on like Twitter and social media, and that's great. And, you know, those are probably, I read a lot more. But if you want to like interview me or hire me for something, go to my website. Please read my frequently asked questions, where almost all of this is fucking answered, and then message me.
Yeah, there's that. When I say you'll never bother us, like, you know, social cues. Sometimes social cues are hard to understand. But, you know, if you see them, you know, sitting at a restaurant with their family, maybe not necessarily stay there for half an hour.
Right. Staring at them intently.
Yeah.
Waiting for them to notice you.
But, you know, we have social media to. For that, you can just send a message. And like you said, maybe they don't see it right away.
Right.
Because hundreds of notifications, if not thousands.
Yeah.
But at some point, they'll see it. And that might change their entire day.
Right. And they may not react to it, but that's fine. There's so many things that I get that I wish I had time to like comment back on or react to or whatever. And sometimes even just clicking the like button, I don't have time for. But I do read all of the stuff that's on my socials, as long as you follow me, because again, I ignore trolls.
But like you just said it, you don't have time to respond positively to someone who responded positively, because again, more often than not, when it's positive, it's like silence.
Yeah.
You know, there's no, and it goes both ways, but like all of the comments that I've seen on Discord, on Facebook, on BoardGameGeek, on Twitter, all of them, like every time someone gives, like says something positive, something they've enjoyed, or like it makes my freaking day.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I love it. I wouldn't keep doing this if I wasn't getting all the positivity that I do in this community. Because there was a point where I was like, all right, I'm done. You know, and
there are days like that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And it's hard. And every once in a while, I actually have some really amazing people in this community where they actually notice when I haven't been posting on socials and will like, hey, just popping in to say, I love your work. I love you. Please come back. And I was like, oh, no, I'm here. Just swamped under work or whatever's going on. But I mean, that absolutely makes my day that there's somebody out there who cares if they haven't heard from me.
One last thing about like positives.
Yeah.
Every person that I've had amazingly positive experiences working with in this industry, I have given their names before mine.
Yes.
To anyone looking for people. And I will never stop doing this. I'm not asking everyone to do this or saying that I'm, you know, better by doing this. It's not the point. But the point is, we said earlier that when, you know, when something goes wrong, we talk to each other and all that. The opposite is also true.
Yeah.
positive experiences get shared. And oh, and yeah. if they don't, they should. Because one, it's a way to protect ourselves, but also it's, you know, a way to elevate voices or people that might not otherwise be, you know, that might be passed over.
Absolutely.
Or for whatever reason. And yeah, it's happened for projects that I was like, hey, you know what? This person.
Yeah.
Like I will do it if this person is unavailable, because I think that this person would not only be a great fit, but would also love working on it. And
oh yeah.
And I'm in a position, of course, again, it's kind of a privileged position to do this, because I did do that only a couple of times, because, you know, opportunities don't abound necessarily, but where I was able to say, no, I will not take it. Take this person. And unless they say no, yeah, sure, I'll do it. But like, go to them first.
Right.
And yeah, there's a bit of privilege there, because I was able to afford, you know, not working on that contract and still have a roof over my head.
Right.
But I feel like everyone who's in a place that they can do that should.
Yes.
But even when they can't, none officially, we still talk about it.
Right.
I still rave about my friends who I think are super talented and not, you know, seen or utilized enough.